This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 40 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And only for the month of January, earn up to $550 extra when you sell with The RealReal. That's right, up to $550 extra. Go to TheRealReal.com to get started. Earn up to $550 extra this month at TheRealReal.com. Terms apply.
Hello and welcome to the Nick Oliveri Show, where we discuss great people, great art, and the many things in between. Especially great art. I'm Nick Oliveri. Let's get right into it. Today's not going to be a super, super long episode. I only started this podcast about 2 weeks ago. Some of the feedback's been awesome. And it's just really fun to get my thoughts out in a totally different way. Although I prepare for these episodes, I'm just very grateful for, you know, the downloads, the listeners, the people, giving some feedback and maybe reaching a new audience that I wouldn't have otherwise had done if I haven't started this. But it's a really cool medium to do when I'm not having to like format and edit and really shape a book, you know. In a way, prose, even poetry really, is architecture, right? You could say poetry is kind of an adornment, but, you know, I all writing is architecture. You're building something, you're planning it, you're shaping it, right? But with podcasts, even though I prepare, I got my notes, I have a little bit more of a free rein, actually a lot more. So, and you know, these are unedited. So we're going to get right into it. This episode today is going to be about writing, what it means to be a writer. Have you ever wondered, like, if you're a writer? Have you ever questioned yourself? Just on the craft, you know? So I toured the nation in 2024, and as I record this, we're beginning February already of 2025. Can't believe it, but it's happening. Time moves quick. The days are long, the years are short, right? So I toured the whole nation. I can't say the whole nation, but all across the country. I had more than 44, 45 book signings within the span of about 12 to 13 months. And I signed in over 13 states, mostly Barnes and Nobles, few indies along the way. All sorts of people, but a lot of writers would come up to me naturally, right? Naturally. They'd want advice. They'd want to know how I got there, how I published, my process. Obviously, you know, what the book's about, but they'd have so many questions like, oh man, like, how'd you do this? Or like, how old are you? I'd get that from everyone. But, you know, writers specifically, the reason I bring that up is a lot of the writers, young or old, that have never published anything are like, yeah, I'm an aspiring author or I'm an aspiring writer. And to that I say, poppycock. I'm calling poppycock. That's right. Excuse my French, but I'm calling that a load of hooey, and in the best way possible. I'm trying to be positive here. So what I mean by that is so many writers, and yes, aspiring novelists or authors approached me and said, oh, well, I'm trying, or oh yeah, I want to be a writer. And I go, do you write? And they're kind of taken aback, you know. So many people in all sorts of locales would come up to me asking for advice. I've actually helped many of them get their books out, format them or point them to the right people and such and such, right? Give them some advice on the craft and swap stories, swap knowledge or just chat about favorite books, what we like to read, what we like to write. But a lot of them, especially the younger writers that would approach me, would be like, I'd ask him that question. I go, well, do you write? Because they'd say, I'm an aspiring writer. I'm trying to write. I say, do you write? Their eyes get a little wide. They would. All cities I went to, all bookstores I was in, whenever this came up, and it came up a lot because, you know, naturally I would get approached by writers. They want to know how I got in that seat right there. They want to know, they want to sign their own books, right? It's fun. It's cool. It's a cool idea. It's a lot of fun. Let me tell you. And they'd be taken aback at the question, do I write? Well, yeah, they'd say, yeah, I write. And then I'd say something that seemed to have blown their mind, but it's such a simple revelation, really. It's not revelatory. It's not calculus. I didn't invent calculus. I'm not designing a better wheel. I simply just say, oh, you write? Okay, then you're a writer. You know, how often? You know, if you write like maybe once a month or once every 2 months, but if you put in consistent effort, I'm not talking 1,000 words a day, 2,000 words a day necessarily. You can if you want. More power to you. God bless, right? But if you write consistently, if you write with some goals, if you write with no goals, if you write poetry, if you write short stories, if you write creative fiction, if you write novels, epic fantasy, if you write short, you know, novellas, if you write couplet poems, like, I don't know, right? If you journal every day, every week, whatever, you're a writer. You're a writer. You write. Hemingway, who I know is becoming a little bit of a recurring figure on this podcast. It's just, he's a big influence of mine. He's a big influence of mine. Hemingway is. He was one of the spurs to actually inspire me to become a novelist. It was at a tough juncture in my life, but I'm not gonna, you know, that's for another episode. But he's a huge influence of mine. So if you hate him, or if you hate his story, if you hate his books, if you despise what he's done, his career, whatever, his womanizing habits, his alcohol, there's a lot to, I guess, dislike about Hemingway. You know, nobody's perfect, but I separate the art from the artist as well. And I think if I actually do believe that if you don't separate the art from the artist, I'm actually going to be, you know, call some people out here. I'm going to be a little negative. If you don't separate the art from the artist, I question your intellect. I question your intelligence. I question how functional and large and capacious your cerebral cortex is. I question your neocortex. I question your higher order thinking if you can't separate the art from the artist. Sorry. I'm not sorry. Sorry, but I'm not sorry. Hemingway had a quote anyway. So, and by the way, there's still a lot to learn from Hemingway. Especially if you don't like him. Then you can, you know, maybe explore that. Maybe ask, hey, why do I have a visceral reaction to that? Or like, why am I just, you know, kind of neutral and just don't really gravitate toward his books? You know, why is The Old Man and the Sea boring to me? Just kind of something to explore. Anyways, we have a quote here. It's one of my favorite quotes on writing. There's millions of quotes on writing, but this one is among one of my favorites. It's got to be in the top, right? It's up there. Hemingway, now, this is often attributed to him. People will say, oh, he didn't say it, whatever. Nowadays, there are articles coming out saying Michael Jordan didn't say, well, Republicans buy sneakers too. He did say that. So there's Hemingway, there are whole posthumous collections of Hemingway's letters to people like F. Scott Fitzgerald about on writing, about the craft, about the business, about, you know, his life and how writing intertwined with it and why he did it and how he did it, his process and everything else in between, all throughout, like letters, like epistolary nonfiction, if you will. I don't know if that's a thing, but you know what I mean. So he probably said this at some point, and if not, I'm sure he would concur with this idea. but I bet he said it. He said, "There's nothing to writing. All you do is sit down at a typewriter and bleed." Repeat. "There is nothing to writing. All you do is sit at a typewriter and bleed." Whoa. It's a little intense. That's, there's blood involved.
This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 40 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And only for the month of January, earn up to $550 extra when you sell with The RealReal. That's right, up to $550 extra. Go to TheRealReal.com to get started. Earn up to $550 extra this month at TheRealReal.com. Terms apply.
There's blood involved. Whoa. What does he mean by that? What does he mean by that? I take it for, if you're going to go out, and if you're going to actually put words on a page, whether it's journaling, whether you want the world to see it, whether you don't, you may know a man by the name of Marcus Aurelius. He happened to be one of the last great emperors of Rome. He wrote a little known book called Meditations. Don't know if you've heard about it. It's not the greatest work on Stoicism ever, but it is the most famous work on Stoicism. So, you know, Epictetus had his thing and whatever, but that was literally just a journal for Marcus Aurelius. He ascribed a Stoic thought, but like his writing is now so proliferated today and so influential today. Marcus Aurelius's kind of Stoic musings, if you will, his book Meditations, it was never meant to be seen. Franz Kafka's work, if you know Kafka, Franz Kafka is one of the most influential writers from Europe in the last two centuries, I'd say. I don't think that's, now maybe like fictional writers, you know, we can leave like the nonfiction philosophers out, but like in terms of the last 200 years, Kafka is up there in terms of influence and proliferation. His dying wish was for his manuscripts that never saw the light of day, except he would read them to his friends sometimes and they'd laugh. They'd laugh about it. And Kafka had a, if you study him a little bit, he had an awful life. He was a tortured man. And he died young, to just really give you a feel-good story about Franz Kafka. Well, his dying wish was basically, he never shared his works with the world. Few people read them or saw them, or he read some passages to his friends and they'd laugh or they'd, you know, react to it, discuss it. His dying wish was burn these manuscripts. Don't let anyone see them. That's how anxious he was. That's how nervous he was. And instead of burning them, one of his friends, I forget his name, it was like Max something. Well, anyways, one of his friends just said, "I'm going to defy your dying will. I'm going to defy your will, and I am going to publish your works because I think they're that freaking good, and the world deserves to see them. The world deserves to know them. The world deserves to know and understand that they're not alone. This earth made up of all these individuals that are born alone and die alone, they feel a lot of the same things you do, Franz, and I think you'd be a whole heck of a lot happier if you saw everyone's reaction to them, however they get out." So they were published posthumously. A lot of people don't know that. Are you going to call Franz Kafka a writer? Because while he was alive, he didn't have any published works. Are you going to say Franz Kafka is not a writer? Would you say he's not a writer? If you ever met him and you lived during his time? Would you say he's not a writer? You might. I would always say he's a writer. Even if I knew him back then, if I know him now. And the reason is I have a very cohesive but very simple philosophy to what it means to be a writer. Do you write? Do you write consistently? Do you put the sweat in? Do you put the strife in? Do you put the pain in the work? Do you bleed at the typewriter? As Nietzsche said, do you write in blood? Right? He said, I only have something like regard for writers who write in blood. Do you do that? Do you write? Do you journal? Franz Kafka was always a writer as soon as he started writing. That was his therapy. He was more of a writer than most. Even if his manuscripts got burned and never saw the light of day, you don't have to publish a thing. And I'm not even talking books. I'm talking articles. You don't have to put anything out into the world. Marcus Aurelius didn't. Would you say he wasn't a writer? Would you go up to that Roman emperor's face and say, you're not a writer? He wrote pretty much every day. He wrote. He was a writer. You know? Hemingway obviously was a writer, but different way. Commercials, massive, massive commercial success during his time. Friends with the literary luminaries, the literati of literature, if you will. And he was probably the crown jewel of that time, around the 50s, 1950s, that is. So I don't know if I'm going to cap it off here, but I want you to just kind of step back, just think, hey, like, if you actually aren't a writer and you practice something else, maybe you just play a lot of video games. That's great. Nothing wrong with that. I love video games. Don't really get to play them much anymore, but freaking love video games. Grew up on Zelda and Pokemon, man. Mario Kart. Maybe you're dedicated to a different craft. Maybe you're dedicated to design. Maybe you're dedicated to raising your family. Maybe you're dedicated to a sport. You want to make the basketball team. If you don't make the varsity team, now, I'm not trying to come in here with like a defeatist attitude. I'm trying to really make this positive, especially for artists, but really anyone, entertainers, business people, whatever. Just because you didn't land that job at that bank, you know, at Citibank or, I don't know what's another big bank, JP Morgan Chase, and you just didn't land the job, and now you're at like a middle market bank. Does that mean you're not a banker? Sure, you would have liked it. Maybe this is a better route for you. You know? Or if you don't have millions upon millions of dollars, but you still have some investments. You have some investments here. You have some investments there. You gave some out here. You loaned a little bit there. Or maybe you're investing in yourself. Does that mean you're not an investor? If you love to design things, if you continue to design, or if you continue to paint and you've never sold a painting, are you not a painter? You paint. You paint. Okay, you paint. I'm getting animated here. No pun intended. I'm getting animated. You paint. Stop saying you're an aspiring painter, even if you've never sold anything. Oh, have you ever heard of a guy named, what was his name? Vincent? Vince Lombardi? No. That was football. Vincent Van Gogh. Yeah. That was his name. You ever heard of him? Vincent Van Gogh? He sold one painting during his life. He sold one painting. It was for like 400 francs, I think. One painting. Correct me on the price if I'm wrong there. But he sold one painting, and he was basically impoverished and supported by his brother Theo his whole life. He didn't start painting till he was 30. But once he hit 30 and once he started painting, would you go up to Vince Van Gogh and say, you are not a painter? He painted. He was a painter. Didn't matter if he ever sold anything. There are so many painters right now that haven't sold a thing, or have sold maybe one commissioned portrait, two commissioned portraits. Maybe they got one landscape painting into one gallery. Maybe they've just, none of their work has been seen by no one and they've been trying to get it out there. But if you paint, you're a painter. And the same goes for writing and any other craft. Do you perform your craft? Do you do your best to perfect it? Do you sweat over it? Do you do it in earnest? Do you do it when you don't have to? Do you write? Okay. Yes? Then you're a writer. I think I'm going to leave you off with that. Just some thoughts here. I love that quote. There's nothing to writing. Just sit at a typewriter and bleed. I love it. I love it. You know, it's visceral. It's simple. It's not like gory or horrific or anything, but it's definitely evocative. And it's, in my opinion, euphemistically true. Dive into the deep cuts. And then put it on the page. Beautiful way to do it. I think the only way to do it. Really get into your neuroses, get into your past, get into your fears, get into your future, get into your angst. But do you write? You're a writer. Do you paint? You're a painter. Do you take photos? And I mean, like, you know, intentionally, with intention. You're a photographer. I'm not saying you're a pro photographer. Professional photographers, my rule is you get paid, right? Once you get paid for something, then you're a pro. It doesn't mean you don't have to become a millionaire on it. You don't have to make six figures off of what you do. But if you get paid for something and you don't have to force someone, you don't have to, you know, if people just pay you for your work, whatever that may be, or your product, you're a pro at that. But if you just take photographs in earnest, you know, of nature or, you know, when you're, even if it's just a hobby, or maybe you want to make it more than a hobby, but it really sucks and it's a struggle right now, you're still a photographer. You are a photographer. Okay? Don't say you're an aspiring photographer when you take photographs. Don't say you're an aspiring painter when you paint most of the time, or some of the time, or at least consistently. And you try really hard. You put everything into it. You study the greats. You learn the rules and then you break the rules over time. So don't say that you're not a writer or you're an aspiring writer. If you write, you're a writer if you write. You're a painter if you paint. I'll leave you off with that. Thank you very much. Hey, a couple links down in the description. You can buy my books. You can go check out my site. Recently launched a new clothing line based on Idaza, which is based on Tenochtitlan, the capital of the ancient Aztec civilization around 1400s. And yeah, no, it's called Idaza. We got, and actually all of the garments and accessories, and we're coming out with more, are based on the actual people in the Conjurer series. I was going to call it a trilogy, but there are now four books. So it's really cool. Little side tangent there, but lots of cool stuff. There's Janie's gold bracelet, as was described in the book. There's McCullough's satin scarf. It's Italian satin. Janie's bracelet is 18 karat plated gold. It's really cool. Got a couple links down there if you're interested in the literature, want to just learn more about me. Go ahead, explore. And I'm an open book. Or if I'm not an open book, you can open one of my books at least. So. Appreciate it.
Start managing your data, not your infrastructure. Unified, simple, secure. Welcome to Data Done Right. Only with the Pure Storage platform. Get started at purestorage.com.